And at 26 minutes after the hour on a therapeutic Thursday, we're joined by Pastor Robbie Pruitt. Rod, I'll give you a hand. I just don't know why I did that. Robbie is an Anglican pastor, hangs out a lot in Ashburn, Virginia. He's got a church out there and everything there, a bicycle ministry. He's the executive director of Preserving Bible Times. He is one busy guy. And you look a little, you got a bicycle on your t-shirt there. Is that a custom job there? Very nice.
That's my bike shirt. Yeah, I got my bike shirt on and my beanie cap because it's overcast and cold here today.
But you're inside.
Jim. Good to be with you and David.
Don't you have heat inside the house there, though? I mean,
I do. I just don't know how it works. Just messing around.
Okay.
Is that one of the things the missus is supposed to be in charge of?
Yeah.
I've got a digital thermostat that I can't seem to program.
Okay.
And if I don't go over there and push the button, it'll go cold on me.
Well, you start by setting the date so you know it's winter, out there. So, well, it gets cold in Virginia. It does.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. And we've got the March for Life this weekend, so we're going to be walking around and down by the mall. It's Friday, so March for Life is Friday. Down in D.C., and that's always cold, but at least you're walking on your feet and in a crowd.
And that's a big deal. There are a lot of people around in that. I remember that it happened, after Trump's inauguration. It was a great, great big demo and generated a whole lot of news headlines, too. I imagine now, after this Supreme Court decision, there'll be probably some protesters around, too, you think?
Well, there's always protesters. When we were down... We were actually down there when Trump spoke at the March for Life years ago, and it was a large crowd, increased security. This year it won't be so much, depending on who's speaking, the security can increase or decrease, but it's always, 300,000-400,000 people. It doesn't get a lot of media coverage, but it's largely attended.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a chance I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
I'm told that Kamala Lama's going to give a speech.
Oh.
And maybe it's going to be on Friday.
At the March for Life?
Probably not.
Oh, I was about to say, I think you got your person wrong. Yeah.
I don't think so. I think she's going to be giving a speech, and she's in favor of it. She wants more abortions. In fact, I watched it, in Minnesota House, the House of Representatives is going to start debating the... their abortion bill. They want to make abortion guaranteed, absolutely cast in concrete, guaranteed through the first 6 months of life.
Even
after the child is born, if it doesn't look like exactly what you were expecting, you can go ahead and put it on the back door.
Unbelievable.
It's not a good situation.
Robbie, I do hope you run into some protests out there. That'd be a great chance to witness right there. As long as it's not violent,
Yeah, we always have to shelter our kids because of some of the protesters on both sides can be pretty nasty. Even some of the pro-life folks can be overly graphic in what they're sharing and overly militant in how they're sharing it. Sometimes the pro-life crew needs to act a little bit more pro-life, and then, of course, the protesters can be nasty on the other side. We as Christians are supposed to be championing life for all of life.
Championing, yes, but also a mediating factor out there, keeping the calm. But that's hard when you're surrounded by people stomping their feet and yelling stuff. I don't know how you... That's a challenge. That's a challenge.
Especially we go every year to the March for Life. I mean, this is one of the things that my family and I are committed to. We take our children. We talk about issues of life with our 9-year-old and with our 6-year-old as much as they're able to understand that age appropriately, of course.
Now, you're having a Sanctity of Life Sunday at your church this week. What does that mean in terms of content? What are you talking about with the people?
Well, issues of life, I mean, because we are in the DMV, District of Columbia, Maryland, Virginia, it's called the DMV, the Greater Washington Metro Area, and because of the March for Life, and even the Anglican Church has the Summit for Life, which will be on Saturday. Tonight, and the Summit will be there as well on Saturday. And then we'll have a Eucharistic service on Friday morning in the morning, and my family and I will be there. And then we'll leave that Eucharistic service and go to the March for Life. And I'll end my time actually at the Museum of the Bible, giving a youth group a tour of Museum of the Bible, who has traveled. People travel from all over the country to come here to March for Life, to the city.
So I've built your old employer, the Museum of the Bible. Yeah.
Right, right. Okay. So I've built some relationships with some youth ministries and churches, Anglican churches all over the United States. And when they come here, I'll meet with their youth groups, give them a tour of Museum of the Bible, spend time with them at the Y Summit tonight at the Eucharistic service.
Yeah, I want to comment on that. Take notes for that carefully. I want to know what young people are thinking, especially Christian young people. And I'm also interested to know if maybe they invite friends who aren't, or how they respond to we call it a seminar, or a gathering. Is it a rally? What is it tonight?
Tonight, yeah, it's from 7 to around 9:30, and we'll have dinner together, and there'll be speakers and table discussions with different youth groups, and there's different table leaders at each table.
This is in a church or elsewhere?
Yes, okay. At the Falls Church Anglican in, mm-hmm. in the Falls Church, Virginia, the historic Anglican Falls Church. Mm-hmm. And this Y Summit is fantastic. If your listeners go to Anglicans for Life, and there you can find materials. There's a book written by a friend of mine called Abundant Life, and it's a youth curriculum to teach on issues of life. And so we'll have speakers, and we'll talk about the different issues for life, and then everybody will meet in the morning for the Eucharist mm-hmm. service, and then during the afternoon go to the mall on Washington and listen to more speakers there. And politicians will come, different people. Mike Pence spoke, I think Trump spoke one year. Pro-life senators and House of Representatives. Okay.
Well, I'm interested in hearing what the young people have to say about abortion and life and marriage and families in particular. So maybe you can relate some of those things to us next week when we talk.
Absolutely. And you know, they are kind of like the rest of us. They're swimming in a culture of death. And we're just living in a culture of death, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even in the church, there's... We don't even know when we do it. We bifurcate our faith into the secular and the sacred, and we divide issues of life. We even divide our spirituality from our physical lives. Mm. And because that kind of Gnostic reality is an undercurrent in the church, we don't really necessarily enter into life the way we should. And there's many things I could say about that. Case in point would be Raphael's painting, The School of Athens, which is a wonderful depiction of Plato and Aristotle. Plato gesturing to the divine or upwards,
mm-hmm.
Aristotle gesturing down. And it's the difference between a Greek and a Hebrew thinking. One is intellect or the lofty or knowledge, and the other is the physical, the grounded reality. And so one school is the divine, upward. The other is the physical. And so we have this this Greek-Hebrew divide of what is life.
You know, that painting itself suggests and affirms that this is nothing new, that this divisiveness goes way back, thousands of years, maybe tens of thousands, but thousands of years. And it is part of the human dilemma.
Absolutely. And so we're talking upwards of 300 years B.C. is Plato and Aristotle. And so actually for Plato is 428 to 427. You're talking B.C. He died in 348, 347 mm-hmm. B.C. So this philosophic, you know, what is the essence of life and living can date all the way back to the beginnings or the origins of life.
Before Christianity.
Right. And so who, it begs the question, well, who is the author of life? Who gets to say what life is and how we're to live it? And it's kind of like, a refrigerator will come with an owner's manual. And so how a refrigerator functions, how it builds, how it was built, how it works appropriately, how do you maintenance it, it's to the manufacturer and the instruction book.
I hate to change the topic, but so do thermostats, Robbie.
I knew where that operating manual yeah. is, I wouldn't have my beanie cap on today.
You've referred us to the third chapter of Acts here, which is the healing of a cripple by Peter and John, who were together going. This was just outside the temple. This is, and everybody should just read this. This is an encapsulated story of the whole Bible here,
isn't it?
Including
yeah.
the story of Jesus and life itself, and it's about the author of life.
Right, and Peter accuses the Jews who are. I mean, yeah, he's just healed this person, and now Peter is speaking in Solomon's portico.
Well, it attracted a crowd. That's what attracted the crowd, the healing. It wasn't necessarily Peter or John themselves, who were probably known to many of those people by that time, because Acts, of course, was after the crucifixion and the resurrection and after Pentecost, and, well, it was right near Pentecost. So this is very significant that it was a miraculous thing, a healing that got people's attention, and they got the whole story. Is this not a pattern for us as Christians? I mean, not that we have to heal yeah. people to get attention. We just have to be there where they are.
Right. Notice the testimony. I mean, Peter and John are going up to the temple. Most of your listeners will probably be familiar with this lame beggar. And there's this man who's lame from birth. He's experiencing death, really. I mean, my functional definition of life and death and the things of God and the things of the enemy is basically John 10:10, where Jesus says, "The thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy, but I have come that you might have life and that you might have life abundantly." So now you can look at all of life and you see a lame man who's a beggar from birth.
Let's back up just a minute, because we've got to get to the social mores of the time, enforced right. and taught by the Jewish religious establishment. If he were lame, if he were disabled, if he were deformed somehow, if he had leprosy, it meant God didn't like you, and so we won't either. And so chances are this lame person was isolated in society. This was a rebirth for him, not just a healing.
Right, and that's a good question. When you experience infirmity, sickness, death, is it God's work or is it the enemy's work? And so, yeah, there was a school of thought, a Jewish school of thought, and you can hear this in Jesus' healing of the blind man in John chapter 9, where his disciples say, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he's born blind?" So there you can hear the context of, okay, somebody has sinned and God is punishing them, mm-hmm. that they are like this. So there is that school of thought that, okay, you're sick because, or there's illness because, or you've got this infirmity because you've done something wrong, or somebody in your family did something wrong, and therefore you're cursed. Well, there's another biblical reality of what Jesus said, that the enemy, the thief, comes to kill, steal, and destroy. So if it's an issue of life, it's God. If it's an issue of death and sickness, it's the enemy's work. And that's how I understand what Jesus is saying here. Not that... it's not also true what Jesus says to the disciples in John 9, that neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the glory of God might be revealed. So just kind of like what Joseph said to his brothers, what you meant for evil, God meant for good, that God's going to leverage even sickness and death for his glory and his purposes. But God's not the author of discord. He's not the author of sickness and death. He's the author of life. And that's basically what Peter is getting to with his testimony, really, to the Jews of the entire Council of Scripture. And that's why I love Acts chapter 3.
This would apply, too, to the raising of Lazarus, wouldn't it? Because that was Jesus' point, was God is the author of life. He's how Lazarus is coming out of that tomb.
Exactly. And so if you see that God is the author of life, it's his idea, he made it, then who are we to end it is my point. I think issues of life, we can relegate issues to life simply to the issue of abortion. And abortion is an issue of life, but that's not the only issue. Anytime we're failing to live into or up to the author of life's or the designer of life's design, then we're falling short of being people of life. Anytime we divide the sacred and the secular and don't live fully, anytime we disembody our Christianity and adopt Gnostic theologies and philosophies, we've deviated from understanding life or living life fully for all of our life. And that's a problem. And I would argue that when you adopt Gnostic theologies, when you adopt these heretical ideas, it becomes easier to disregard life as God has intended and to go off the script of his owner's manual.
Well, I think it prompts you to go searching for answers. And if you've already dismissed God, that doesn't leave you with much.
Right.
When you try to resolve life's great issues, if you've dispensed with God as a possibility, there's no answer for you.
And clearly that's what's happened here with Peter healing the lame beggar. This man that's born this way, and you know the story, he comes to Peter and the disciples and say, you know, he's begging, and he looks down and says, look at us, and he fixes their attention, his attention on them to receive something from them. But Peter says, silver and gold have I not, but what I give you is in the name of Jesus, rise up and walk. So you see that this man is asking for money to function and to be provided for. But what Peter gives him in the name of Jesus is basically his functionality, his physical function back, so that he can fully live and actually have his dignity and be able to, I imagine, at some point, do something other than sit there and beg, to give him his agency and to give him his, basically give him his life back. And so he takes him by the right hand, rises him up, his feet and his ankles are made strong, and he begins leaping and dancing and walking. And he enters into the temple with them. So this is now a walking billboard of healing and life. You literally have this man vibrantly leaping and praising God in the temple. And, you know, we can't have anybody praising God in the temple and causing a scene like that. It reminds me of some of us at church. We don't want to get too excited about God in church, but here's this man actually unfiltered worshiping and praising God.
Well, it was more than a healing, though. It's something that Doug Greenwald taught on over and over and over again. It's not just about healing. It's not just about making the leprosy disappear or the limb reform naturally. It's about total restoration, was the word
That's right.
He used. This is bringing you back to life as it should be.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing. It's physical and it's spiritual.
Hmm.
It's both. All of life is consisting of the entire person. This is why the Shema, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength. I mean, this is a holistic devotion and commitment to loving God with all of who we are. Notice what God does not say. He doesn't say, just love God with your spirit. He doesn't say, just love God with your mind. He doesn't say, just love God with your body, with your strength. No, he says, love God with all of who you are, and then he labels various ways that is true. So it's not, as Plato would have us believe, the lofty or the transcendent, and it's not just what Aristotle would have us believe, that it's just the physical and the tangible. It's both. It's the physical, it's the spiritual, and so when God and his kingdom come in, and his representatives in this case with Peter and John and the disciples, yes, they are healing this man for the restoration of his entire being, for total, they're giving his life back. I mean, I said it that way earlier, and Jesus has this way of not only healing someone either physically or spiritually, but restoring them to the people around them.
Another great story of that is when Jesus healed the right hand of a man on the Sabbath day in front of the Pharisees who intended to trap him. The point was, you don't heal on the Sabbath. You do no work on the Sabbath. Mm. And so here's a man with a withered right hand, and Jesus, one, just says, hold out your hand. He doesn't touch him, doesn't massage him, doesn't wash him off, but the healing occurs with Jesus doing no work. Aha! He abided by the rule. no work on the Sabbath. And yet some, and Luke had to tell us that it was the right hand in this, because that means something more so than, I mean, why did he care if it was the right? Just hold out your hand, whatever, you know, whatever. No, there's a story. There's a reason for that. The right hand was the hand you ate with, embraced with, went to the temple and raised your hand and took oaths, and the left hand was for personal hygiene.
Yeah.
So because it was his right hand, he was totally isolated.
Yep.
From life, couldn't eat with people, couldn't hug people, could it just in that culture, this was more than just a healing of his right hand. It was a healing of his life.
That's exactly right. It's another case in point of Jesus giving somebody's life back. But even see what the rub is. You're violating your spirituality by not keeping the Sabbath by physically healing this person. Mm-hmm. As if the spiritual matter of keeping the Sabbath is transcending the needs physically. In other words, pitting the physical against the spiritual. Again, this is a bifurcation. This is a false divide between the sacred and the secular. And it's Gnostic, this idea that you have to abide by things that will keep you spiritually whole to the neglect of your physical body, which God created. If God is the author of life who creates us from the dust and breathes his ruach into us, his spirit, the wind, the breath of God, animating a physical matter, then our bodies matter. If we are taking Jesus at his word that he resurrected bodily and that we will be resurrected bodily, then our bodies matter. The physical component of who we are matters. We're not just spiritual beings having a human experience. We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're both spirit and flesh. And when we divide that, A.W. Tozer said, nothing less than a whole Bible will make a whole Christian. And I love to say, nothing less than a whole person will make a whole Christian. Mm-hmm. And that's body, mind, and spirit. That's all of who we are. So Peter calls these religious leaders in Acts chapter 3 to task on this. And he confronts them starting at verse 12.
Because they arrested Peter and John after that event, yeah.
Well, there's this debate, ironically, mm-hmm. going on in Solomon's portico. Mm-hmm. Which is where the religious leaders are discussing high and lofty spiritual things there in Solomon's portico, talking about the wisdom of God. And we believe that Jesus is the embodiment of wisdom, and Paul addresses this in Corinthians, that the Jews look for a sign, and to the Greeks look for wisdom. And Jesus is the full embodiment of both the wisdom of God and the physical sign. He gives us both in his person. Hmm. And so this is Peter addressing these people looking for wisdom, and he saw it. He says, men of Israel, why are you wondering at this, referring to the healing of this lame man? Or why do you stare at us as if through our own power and piety we have made him walk?
And so by the way, I was wrong. This is not the incident where they were arrested. That came later, I think.
That's right.
But they did provoke the powers that be who addressed them and said, don't do this. Don't do this. This goes back to the Garden of Eden and that God intended this division to exist. I mean, he couldn't have been surprised by it. Once the humankind disobeyed, he could have wiped them out. Okay, I'm done with you. But he didn't. They persisted in their physical form. They had the physical life. He gave them the opportunity to learn what that was like, existing without him, and to make a decision, that is to believe, that is to have the faith, to come back to him and reunite with God, which is the choice he gave us through Jesus Christ.
Well, it makes you, I mean, to your point, and I agree with you, it does. It goes all the way back to Genesis. And what's God's warning? If you eat of this fruit, you're surely going to die. Hmm. Is part of this death that God is speaking of, certainly it's the physical body dying, but isn't it also the separation between the spirit and the body? isn't it this idea that to be absent from the body, Paul says, is to be present with the Lord? So when we die, our souls are with God until the resurrection of the body, where these two things can be put to rights again. So death entered into the world through Adam's sin. And this is part of what Peter's spelling out to the people. Men of Israel, why do you wonder at this? Why are you staring at us as if we did this? The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus, whom you delivered over and denied in the presence of Pilate. He basically begins to tell them the history of their faith and their people, invoking Abraham, which is the father of the Jewish people, and he begins to give them salvation history. But you denied the holy and righteous one and asked for a murderer, and there's the death, and you killed the author of life. But God raised him from the dead, and to this we are witnesses. They're witnesses of the author of life, and they're showing the setting back to whole this lame man.
Rob, you don't mess around, do you? You get right to the basics. And we delight in that. Robbie Pruitt, again, Anglican priest, pastor at his church there, and involved in multiple ministries, including Preserving Bible Times. PreservingBibleTimes.org is their website. You can link to it from our site if you're listening on the BrokenRoadRadio.com today. You'll find a whole lot of stuff there that you can either purchase. There are things you don't have to purchase. You can read online. You can download ebooks and streaming video, all having to do with biblical context. That's the stuff that enables us to read between the lines and to understand the full dimension of what the Bible, particularly the Gospels, have to offer us. And Robbie, we're grateful. Have a special Sunday, and get back to us on those young people. Let us know what they're thinking these days, okay?
Absolutely. Will do. Thanks for having me on. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
Enjoy that, gentlemen.
Doesn't it ever.
Thanks, Robert.